Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. On today's program, we're going to be talking to Mark Cumley about his parents and his family. He was the son of Victor and Geraldine Cumley. We'll talk about their life in Jessamine County after this word from our sponsor, the Farmers Bank.
Beginnings are important, especially when it comes to building a future. From start to finish, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County will be with you every step of the way. Whether it's a house, a car, a college fund, or saving for retirement, it all starts here. Stop by any of our four convenient Jessamine County locations today or visit us on the web at myfarmersbank.net. Banking with friends and neighbors, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you on this Saturday morning as we continue to learn about people, places, and things of Jessamine County. With us today, we're going to be talking about a couple of people who were in our community for a lot of years, and their last name was Cumley. Some of you may remember Victor and Geraldine, especially they lived up on the corner of 3rd and Maple. Their son, Mark, is with us. Good morning, Mark.
Hi, Doug.
Glad that you could come in today, and let's talk about your parents and your family, because there's a lot of people that listen to this program that remember them and remember people from PAC in the past, and we'll just talk a little bit about them and what they did for, and you guys, too, what you're doing, too. Let's start with Victor. Now, I know he was very proud to be from Pollard, Kentucky.
Yes, he was. He was from Pollard, and he never forgot that, and he liked to go back there and visit, and he talked about it till the day he died.
Do you know who his parents were?
His parents were Dola and Calvin.
Okay. Now, were they originally from Pollard, or did they come in here from somewhere else?
I really don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not for sure about that, but he had people all over Pollard, so.
Yeah, kin to all of them.
Yeah, kin to everybody down there, I think. So.
It seems like, I remember, he was somehow hooked to Ellistine Hager through the houses, I think.
They are kin. We were kin. I know when I'd go to school, I'd say, I got a new girlfriend. He'd say, who? And I'd tell him, and he'd say, well, she's your third cousin twice removed. So it's
so
kind of funny.
It was limited.
Yeah,
for you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you know where how they met, him and your mom?
I sure do, yeah. She was originally from up around McKee, Kentucky, and her mom died when she was about 10 years old, and she came to live with her mom's sister, which was Ella and Lunsford. And Ella was married to Jesse Lunsford, who was a postman in Nicholasville. And he delivered the mail for years, and they lived down on Maple Street, down right above where the Kurtz's house was, the White House with several acres down there. And she lived with her, and she went to high school here, and she was good friends with my father's sister, Gwen Lentz, who lives in Paducah now. And they were real good friends. And I think he had seen her out somewhere, maybe. I don't know. I asked Gwen, and Gwen seemed to think maybe it was the windmill. I don't know if the windmill was around then. Gwen asked me, but he had seen her out at some restaurant and said, you know, I just might go to the Army and come back and marry that gal. And then one night he was down there at the Lunsfords with Gwen. Gwen stayed there a lot because she went to high school here in Nicholasville, and he saw my mom on the front porch, or my dad was getting ready to leave, and she said, aren't you going to give me a goodbye kiss? And they kissed, and then I think Gwen told me that Mom called Mary Esther Lockridge and said, I've just met the man I'm going to marry.
So
that's how they met. And they were married in my Aunt Ella's garden right behind the house. And I don't know that it was a garden, but it was a backyard, but they called it a garden wedding. I know that she had sprained her ankle about 2 days before. They talked about this a long time. That she had sprained her ankle about 2 days before the wedding. And he had put vinegar and brown paper on it. So anytime we had a sprained ankle playing ball or anything, till the time I graduated from college, I had brown paper and vinegar on my ankle. So
did your dad, now did he graduate, I guess, from Nicholasville High?
I think so, yeah.
And did he go straight to the Army? Or?
He went to college.
Oh, he did?
Okay. Yeah. You know, it's pretty hilly down there. And I know Calvin had told him one day, he said, you know, you can't ever accomplish much in these hills. You need to go to college. And not many people down through there had gone to college in the family. So when he went, I know he hitchhiked, and he told me that some of his aunts and uncles wouldn't even pick him up because they didn't really want him going to college.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he walked a lot.
Did he go to UK?
He went to UK. Okay. He majored in geology, and they deferred him. He got drafted or signed up. I don't remember what the deal was, but he had about 3 months left, and they deferred him until he got out of college. And right after he got out, he went in, and he went in as an officer because, you know, he was a captain in the Army.
What made him want, if you know, what made his interest in geology?
I don't know. You know,
I think that's kind of an odd.
I don't know, really know. Yeah. I know he was a very good speller and actually won like a state spelling championship when he was in the third or fourth grade.
Wow. Yeah,
at least he told us that. So
went to college, went to UK. Now he saw your mom.
Right.
And went to the Army.
Went to the Army. I think they saw each other a little bit before the Army, and then when he came back, they got married.
Where did he serve in his Army career?
All over Africa. And
really?
I think some in Germany, but he was stationed in Africa more than anything, I think.
When would that have been? He didn't see any war action.
Oh, I don't know. I think he did, actually, because I think it was right during World War II, 1943,
44. Yeah, I guess he would have, right at the start.
Yeah, right. No, he got some kind of an award or accommodation for saving. I thought he saved a guy that had fallen off of a ship, but I talked to Laura on the way down here, and she said it was a package of merchandise or papers or something that had fallen off of a ship or floated away from a dock, and he jumped in and got it and swam it to safety. And I was thinking it was somebody, but she thought it was some kind of valuable parcel. I don't really know the story, but I do remember him talking about it, and I actually saw it in the newspaper clipping that he had.
So he got out of the Army, came back, everything good, safe. Everything,
right.
And nothing happened.
They got married.
And they got married.
Got married.
In the garden.
Right. And then he went to work for Armco Steel.
Okay.
Worked there for several years. I know he told me he was on commission and was a while before he sold anything. And he told me that he went to his boss and said, look, I don't think this is working out. And the boss said, well, how do you think I feel? I'm advancing you. You haven't sold anything yet. But then he started making a lot of sales and became pretty successful at that. Mm-hmm. I know we would drive to Cincinnati and we'd see a big metal pipe sticking out of the road on I-75 when they used to call it Death Hill. And there was a big black pipe, and it was, I'd say, man, that's an ugly pipe sticking out of the highway. And he said, hey, I sold him that. So it was kind of funny.
Was proud of that.
Yeah.
Pipe.
Oh, yeah.
How long did he work for them?
Well, we were talking about that, too. I'm not really for sure. I'd say about 1960, he started working for the Kentucky Association of Highway Contractors.
Right. Now, but before 60, before we get too far down that road, at some point in time, he and your mom decide it's time to start a family.
Right.
Let's talk about you and your sisters. Give it to us in line, and not only when they came along, but maybe what they're doing now.
Well, now, I can't tell you the dates, but
that's
I can tell you, I am 63, and I was born in 52. Richard was born in 55. I think Laura is 3 or 4 years older than I am, and Missy is right after Laura, so they got married probably about 46, 47, had Laura, you know, shortly 48, 49, and then had Missy, and then me and then Richard. So Laura is in North Carolina. She moved away. She's in Carrboro, North Carolina, and she also has a home in St. Simons Island, Georgia, which I assume she will move there eventually because she likes the climate there better than in North Carolina.
Right.
And Missy has moved to Missy moved to Baltimore, and she just recently moved to North Carolina after her husband passed away to be with Laura. And I think Missy may move to Georgia, too. Richard lives in Lexington. He owns an insurance company. He's married, and he has several homes in St. Simons, Georgia. They all kind of migrate toward that. It's a nice vacation spot, and I assume one day he'll retire down there.
Did one of them find it and the rest of them kind of
fall? Well, you know.
Or was that a family vacation?
No, I went down there once to Sea Island, Georgia, and it was pretty expensive, so I started going to St. Simons, taking my kids.
Yeah.
And we kind of liked it, and Richard came down. And the family did come down there a lot, and then Richard bought a couple of houses down there, and he rents them out. And
so do you have a house?
No, no.
So you found the place and are the only one that doesn't have
a house? Yeah, I'm the only one that doesn't have a house down there. I just bum off them, stay with them when I go down there.
That sounds to me like you're the smartest of the bunch.
I don't know about that. Maybe the poorest of the bunch. How about that?
Tell us about you, man. You've had a
interesting life. Oh, I just, I have a pretty interesting life. I'm a magician, self-employed magician. I've always been self-employed, and seems like I'm busier now than I've ever been. Mm-hmm. Mom always encouraged my magic. Dad, they would go take trips, and there weren't any magic shops around here. They would go to Washington, D.C. There was a magic shop up there, and they would bring me a trick or two. and I'd have fun with it, and they really encouraged me, so that's kind of why I do it.
Man, you were telling me the other night at the fair, how many you do a year?
Oh, my gosh, I do 400 or 500 shows a year.
How you do it? Of course, you know that there the other night. You were there every night, I think, and yeah. Did, what, 2 or 3 a night?
Yeah, I did 3 or 4 a night. And
so you got there. 15, 20 right, shows right, in a week.
Right, I was there 6 nights, and they've booked me again for next year.
Wow.
So they got a great fair out there.
Where's the farthest you go?
Well, I used to be at the casino in Indiana on a regular basis, in the Rising Sun, Indiana, mm-hmm. and it got a little far, 2 hours away every Friday and Saturday night, so I just kind of stay a little closer now that I'm older. But I used to do Vegas once every summer at the mm-hmm. Riviera Hotel, but I don't do that too much anymore. I'll go wherever they want me as long as they pay.
Interesting career.
Right.
Interesting career. Now, your dad, you said, went to work for the highway department. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it wasn't the highway department. He was actually, it was not anything political. It was, a lot of people think it was. I know every time there was a new administration, people would say, well, is your dad going to keep his job? It was the Kentucky Association of Highway Contractors,
okay.
which was more like a lobbying group for the highway mm-hmm. department. You know, he would make sure that the contractors were well represented when they put their bids in for the road jobs. And he worked closely with helped kind of develop the interstate system through Kentucky. He was kind of proud of that with the Codell Construction and some of the bigger construction companies, Greer Brothers and Young out of London. And that's just what he did.
He did that for quite a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He did that. And then when he retired, he started real estate appraising. He really liked that. He also dabbled in antiques, had a little antique interest. He mm-hmm. traded Oriental rugs and collected fine antiques. And, you know, that was pretty interesting to me, too.
I had forgotten about him doing the appraisal service.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He did quite a few.
Yeah, he did a lot of those. Did them for Kentucky Bank and
yeah.
Jessamine First Federal and several of the banks around town.
What about your mom through all this? Did she work outside the home?
No, she did. When she was in high school, she worked for Dr. Neal here, and then she had a little white dress, just kind of looked like a nurse, from what I recall, that she would tell us, you know. But she went to high school here, and she didn't go to college, but she did work for Miss Steinbeck. Do you remember hearing about Miss Steinbeck
yes.
department store?
Yeah. Yes. In fact,
worked there.
I don't think it was right below where we are, but maybe a door
yeah,
to down.
Yeah, it's somewhere around this block.
Right.
Of course, those old stores are long gone, but she did work for her. And other than that, she never worked. After they got married, she never worked. She was just the stay-at-home mom, cooked dinner at 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock. After you ate dinner, you didn't eat any more. There weren't any snacks around. You know, we ate, and she cooked for us every night and was just a great mom.
She had the hardest job of all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
She made cream candy. I don't know if you remember that, but she made that cream candy and would make 30 or 40 batches of it every Christmas and give it out to people. And, of course, anytime anybody passed away, she would always make them a cake, one of those coconut cakes. Or she was kind of famous for her baking around here. So,
when did we lose them? What year did they each die?
Well, Mom was 2011. I think Dad preceded her by about 3 years, I think. Yeah.
And you all, like every other family, you have your ups and your downs. You had some tragedy, you know, with losing. It was talking about Victor being in the military. Were you in the military?
No, I wasn't. But, you know, you're talking about that. That's the only time I saw my father cry was when my son.
Let's talk about Chase. Yeah. Tell us, because he served his country well and gave the ultimate sacrifice.
Right.
Let's talk about that.
He was killed by a suicide bomber in August of 2005. Mm-hmm. He was 21. He was a Marine serving in the Iraqi war, and he was killed near Fallujah.
And that had to be
it was just terrible.
The worst news that you could ever get.
Yeah, I couldn't tell my parents when I found out. I couldn't call. I called Laura, and I said, I can't tell them. You're going to have to tell them.
Yeah.
So Laura came down here and told them. And, you know, and then when I saw my dad, he cried, and that's the only time I had ever seen my dad cry.
Well, nobody can imagine the feelings you go through unless you've been through it.
Right. And, you know, my mom said she led a Cinderella life up until that point.
Yeah.
You know.
But we do appreciate the fact that he made his sacrifice for
our
country.
Right.
Very honorable. But it's sad. It's sad. He had him 21 years old.
He was 21. He was a Marine. He was very proud of it.
Yeah.
So.
And that's got to be tough, especially the parents, but grandparents too. Sometimes you tend to forget about the other family members. And I remember one story about Victor. I'll tell you, it's really funny. He had a great sense of humor. I know when I was around him and saw him and talked to him. I remember I worked in the county clerk's office, and he bought a new car. And I want to say it was a Mercedes.
I'm not sure. I think he had a Mercedes.
And he came in to get it licensed, and he needed to pay his sales tax. And I remember him talking about it. He said that he, in addition to making the new car or buying the new car, had made a new will. And in it, he wrote, being of sound mind and body, I've spent every penny. And that's just, I always remember that story, but he just had that good sense of humor.
Yeah, he did. He was a great storyteller. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think about, I know that when I was telling him, even when he was dying there, I was there by his deathbed about 2 days before he passed away. And he asked me in a very weak voice, he said, "Are you got a show tonight?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Carrollton, Kentucky." And he said, "That's Billy Goat country up there." So, you know, he had a very good sense of humor, and he could always tell a good story. So,
you know, he was very proud of this county.
Yeah. He loved Jessamine County.
Yeah. And very proud. Well, even more in particular, the Pollard area.
Because, right.
But I know he was very proud of being for here. Let me ask you this, Mark. If you had to describe as a dad, how would you describe in a word or two?
He was very caring, very sensitive, loving. He was not real affectionate, but you knew, you know, outwardly, but you, mm-hmm. you always knew that he was very loving. It was mm-hmm. just, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better parent.
What about your mom?
Same way. And she really? Was very loving and affectionate and just was very sweet to all of us. Mm-hmm. And, of course, none of us ever gave her any problems, any major problems other than, you know, I know sometimes when I was in college, I would stay at the dorm, but mm-hmm. when I was home for the summer, I like to stay out all night. Mm-hmm. And they didn't care as long as they knew where I was. You know, even if I had to call them, there were no cell phones, but right. I'd call them at 5 o'clock in the morning and I'd say, "Hey, I'm in Paris tonight," you know, or "I'm mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. I'm in Georgetown tonight." They didn't care as long as they knew that, you know, where I was.
So. And that you were okay.
Right, right.
You know, you grew up in a time that a lot of people that live in our county don't remember some of the old businesses. You remember, you mentioned Steinbach's and different ones. A whole different than it is now.
Oh, absolutely. There's Hobbs downtown.
Yeah.
Of course, Hemphill's Pharmacy, Yearwood's Pharmacy. I know once when I was a child, they had a big box in front of Yearwood's. It was a big wooden box that Stratton Lumber had built, and some magician was coming to one of the local schools, and mm-hmm. I don't remember his name, but he was going to get out of that box, and that box was on display there in the drugstore window. I'll never forget that, but that was pretty interesting. But, yeah, there were a lot of nice businesses downtown.
Yeah.
And we had nickel days. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. And yeah, and they actually made wooden nickel stands.
Swindler's Shoe Store. You remember Swindler?
I don't.
Yeah, there was Swindler's Shoe Store.
Where was that?
It was Bill Swindler was his name. Bill Swindler, wow. Something like that. But it was down there below Hemphill's.
Well, you remember the days when Saturdays were packed.
Oh, yeah.
The streets were packed. The people visited. It was a typical small town.
Right.
People came to town. And
people would sing on the courthouse lawn and sell stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And people. And I know the courthouse, that limestone wall, it was smooth from where people had sat there mm-hmm. so long. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I asked my dad one time about people, if he had ever seen anybody selling stuff and doing the pitch act like magicians do. I had mm-hmm. gotten interested in that, and he had told me a funny story. He said that he saw a guy selling some kind of herbal medicine, and he was making a pitch trying to sell this, and said some man interrupted him and said, "Mister, will it cure the asthma?" And he said the guy may have been a plant because he had such a great comeback. He said, "Let me tell you something. If it would cure asthma," he said, "I'd have the top floor on the highest office building in Cincinnati. It'd take you 3 months to come see me to get an appointment. No, I don't think it'll cure it, but it will greatly relieve it." And he said he'd sold out of the stuff when he said that. So I never forget him telling me that story.
So, you know, and you mentioned something there. You don't think, and I don't know why, but you don't normally think that there would be people like that selling things in Nicholasville.
Right.
I mean, that almost sounds like something that happened out west.
Right, but yeah, it sure was.
Yeah.
And they'd sing on the court. I'd see the gospel singers. Every Saturday, people came to town.
Yeah.
And you'd see them, the gospel singers, three or four people preaching out there on the courthouse, right in the middle of the courthouse.
Different time.
Yeah, just right there on the courthouse lawn.
Well, and you were telling me prior to the show about the shoe. Tell that story.
Right,
that,
yeah. Well, there was the world's tallest man, and I can't remember. It's Wardlow. I can't remember his first name.
I want to say Robert.
Might have been Robert.
I think
but anyway, he lived in Ohio, and he was, you know, 7-8 feet tall, maybe 7 feet 11, something like that. Had some kind of rare disease. He actually died when he was pretty young. I think he was about 21 when he died. But he came around on tour, and he went to this shoe store, and it was one of the Denman's stores, and he left a big shoe there. And it was, I took it to show and tell when I was in about the third or fourth grade. Mom and Hilda Giles were very good friends, and Hilda and Mary Denman. We knew Mary Denman through Hilda. And I got this shoe and took it to school. And, of course, it may be bigger now than when I was in the third grade, but it seems to me like it was about 3 feet long. And I was in Euro one night telling Mary Esther about it. And Mary Esther Lockridge, she told me, she said, well, I've got that shoe. One of my sons has that shoe. She said, when I cleaned up Mary Denman's basement, that shoe was in there and it was kind of moldy, but we cleaned it up and took it out of there. Mm. So I would love to see that shoe. And I told Mary Esther that, but of course I haven't gotten with her and seen it. But oh yeah, it was, I thought it was, when I recalled it to Mary Esther, I thought it was a salesman's sample, but she told me it belonged to that Wardlow
guy. Yeah.
So very interesting. Well, you know, speaking of show and tell, I took a 3-foot-long machete to school that my uncle had in the Spanish-American War. We passed it around.
Really?
Show and tell. Yeah, he had gotten it off of a Philippine. He was in the Spanish-American War, and he had brought that home, and I took it to show and tell. And can you imagine doing that today?
No. Of course
they wouldn't. Your parents wouldn't let
you.
We never thought anything about it.
But if you did, you'd be expelled all that kind of stuff. Yeah, times were a whole lot different. In a lot of different ways.
I'll tell you another funny story my mom told me, and I had forgotten about it. She told me that I made a homemade bomb, that I had gone down to the Western Auto Store, which was on the corner there where United Bank is now. And I don't know if Western Autos are even still around now, but... And I had bought 2 railroad flares and taped them together with electrical tape, put a little clock in it, put it in a cigar box. I had seen it, I guess, on Roadrunner or Bugs Bunny. And she said it looked just like a homemade bomb. Of course, it wasn't a bomb because it wasn't dynamite. It was railroad flares. But she said, I took that to school. And she said, can you imagine doing that? And I had forgotten about that. But that was in about the fourth or fifth grade, yeah.
You know what's even as amazing is the fact that you could buy railroad flares in downtown Nicholsburg.
Oh, yeah. You could buy anything down there, and they'd fix your tire. I know Bob Purcell owned that store. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that. They owned that store, and we'd ride down there and bug him, and he would fix our tires and charge us 50 cents or a quarter.
You know, we've talked about this many times on this program, but when you start in this 3-block area of starting at Oak and going all the way down, boy, I tell you what, there was everything in the world. But there were so many businesses that were duplicates.
Right.
Think about how many grocery stores. And,
yeah. My Uncle Oscar had a grocery store down
Oscar
there.
Oscar Comley's. Yeah. In fact, that was talked about when we did the program on Cleveland Thompson. Carol, his daughters Carol and Ann, were talking about that Thompson's Market was in what used to be Hendren's.
Right.
And then next door, I think, was Oscar Comley's store.
Right.
And when he decided to sell or retire, whatever, they went over there and tore, I think, the old store down and built back what is now there. Von Groningen's was in it, and I guess now it's some kind of a
theater or something, or it used to be a theater. I think now it's a antique mall or something.
You can rent spaces or something. Of course, and right down the street from that, you had Heathman's, and you had Ann's Beauty Shop, and a lot of, boy, the place was packed with all kinds of things. Where was one of your favorite hangouts as a kid?
Well, I went to Hemp Hills. Yeah. Of course, and I rode my bike down to the Ben Franklin, and I'd park in the back door and go in there and sit on the floor and read comic books. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to buy them. I'd just sit there and read them. Read Superman and Kid Colt Outlaw and all those.
And you know the bad thing about it, though, Mark. I mean, you could do that back then.
Right.
But, boy, you talk about eyes on you. You had eyes because everybody knew it, and all the parents watched you.
Well, I used to hitchhike when I was probably 14 or 15. Herb Van Hook and I actually hitchhiked to Cincinnati. I talked to Herb maybe a couple years ago, and he said, how'd we get home? And I said, I don't remember that, but I remember hitchhiking up there, but I don't know how we got home. We hitchhiked to a magic shop in Cincinnati.
Wow.
But, you know, now I wouldn't do it.
Oh, no.
You know, wouldn't even think about it.
And, no.
you know, I can go to the Kroger now and not know but three or four people maybe. But back then, you knew everybody, like you say.
You did. You knew everybody, and everybody knew you. Right. And you really couldn't get in a whole lot of trouble.
Right.
And get away with it. I'll put it that way.
Right.
Because you just had so many people looking out for you, watching you. And not that they were stalking you, but they had eyes.
Took care of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the good part of that is that you always had a safe place.
Right.
You know, no matter where you were, you knew that if you needed help, that you absolutely could get it. Yeah. Well, this has been fun. Our time, believe it or not, has dwindled away already. It goes quick. But I sure appreciate you coming in and doing some remembering with me, especially about your mom and dad. Nice people.
Oh, yeah.
Very nice people. And a lot of people knew them in this community and appreciated their contribution. I know they were big. Was it the Baptist Church?
Oh, yeah. I think maybe 10 years before they passed away, they had switched and started going to the Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but they were Baptist, and we were all raised Baptist.
Yeah, very involved.
Baptist, yeah.
They were good people. And personally, again, I will reiterate our appreciation to the sacrifice your family made. Your son, and wish you the best in all this traveling around. Folks, if you ever get a chance to see Mark in one of his shows, be sure to do that, because You got a lot of stuff. I mean,
I have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Doug.
My thanks to Mark Cumley for coming in today and sharing some information about his parents, Victor and Geraldine. It is our pleasure to come in every Saturday morning and bring you all things Jessamine. We appreciate you listening right here on Jess FM 105.9.
In 1934, a brand new house cost about $6,000. The cost of a gallon of gas was 10 cents. And in 1934, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County opened their doors at 200 North Main Street in Nicholasville, and they've been there ever since. The times may have changed, but Farmers Bank is still here, still proud to be the only locally owned and locally operated bank in Jessamine County. Banking with friends and neighbors. Farmers Bank, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.